All right, well, good morning, everyone. This is the Friday, October 1st meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. Brendan Sharkey, the chairman of ACIR, and we're joined by our vice chair, Lyle Ray. Lyle, I don't know if you have any welcome thoughts for our monthly meeting.
No, I think we're good to go.
Okay, all right. And then our various and sundry members, who are still joining us at this point. Just as a reminder, once again, this is a virtual meeting, so if you wish to be recognized to speak, member or not, please indicate as much by either waving frantically at the camera or hitting the wave hand function, raise hand function on your Zoom panel there at the bottom. And this is being recorded for public consumption. So let's move right into our agenda. I know that Bruce sent out to all of us a note regarding attendance and specifically with regard to the use of alternates for these meetings. And Bruce, maybe you can kind of summarize what you discovered and what you're communicating and what you hope everyone can be aware of going forward.
Sure. I was going through the statutes regarding the membership listing. It's dangerous to go into statutes, and it got me wondering about the use of alternates, that some members are designated as an individual. Some are designated by an organization which has authority. So I checked with an OPM lawyer and was told there is no provision for the use of alternates for anybody, and that the designating different people, say, for different meetings might be problematic. So that's the reason I suggested at this point stopping with the use of alternates. You know, it was done before I came along. There was already an alternate on the ACIR as of whatever that would have been, 2010 maybe. And look into it more deeply. This was a very quick conversation we had here, but he was pretty emphatic about it. And it seemed important now. Maybe it wasn't a problem when the ACIR wasn't doing, let's call them monumental things, things having big impact. If you're making decisions that have big impacts on people, you want to make sure that you dot all the I's and cross all the T's. So I just wanted to put that out to the group for the group to consider how it wants to proceed. I did not arrange to have us fall just slightly short of a quorum without alternates today to highlight the issue, but the issue is highlighted. And so that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah. Thanks for wandering into the statute for us all, Bruce. I agree with you that to the extent that we're taking on some more weighty topics that have more relevance for a lot of folks around our state, that we do need to make sure that we're doing it properly. And also in the context of the fact that we moved since COVID to a virtual platform, I think it tends to be easy for folks to perhaps either, you know, it may have been more complicated to get to a physical location for a meeting, which lent itself to problems in achieving quorums, but it's a lot easier now virtually if we're going to continue to do that. But of course, you know, folks need to show, and your ability to offer up alternates is going to be limited going forward. Bruce, I know that in your memo you mentioned those members of ACIR that do have the ability to appoint alternates. And as I remember, really that was just those who are elected elected officials named in the statute who, like, say, the Speaker of the House, who can then appoint someone on their to attend on their behalf. Is that a fair summary of that?
The elected officials, like you said, state agencies, in theory, it's the commissioner or the commissioner's designee. And then also CCM and COST are at the very end of the membership list. They are able to designate a representative. The lawyer here at OPM felt that designating someone does not mean that, you know, the Friday of every meeting designate that this person or that person is attending for you that day, that it's intended to be more of a long-term designation, but this may be an avenue for you to pursue in trying to solve the problem.
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion, I don't know, would be, since Bruce has turned this rock over, would be for us to sort of get a guidance memo to ACLR members developed at some point with counsel or others, so that, you know, since this has not been a clear practice in the past, at least to have a sort of guidance memo on, you know, what the rules are. It's like when you have a conflict of interest guidance memo from your board of directors, if you sit on it. That's my suggestion, is to get a clear guidance, you know, who can do what under what circumstances memo. I think it'd be very handy.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, I agree. Martin?
Thanks. I think I know where the mute button is. So, yeah, just to kind of, you know, I agree, you know, kind of probably a memo would be good, as, you know, Lyle had mentioned. And I think it's very clear that, you know, as we talk about this, a designee is not an alternate. Okay, you know, there is a difference there, you know, where it says, you know, OPM secretary or designee. I'm the designee of the secretary. I'm not an alternate. I'm the designee. There is no provision for alternates whatsoever in the statutes written up that was revised to expand the membership here for that. And as Bruce mentioned, you know, with I can give you an example of, you know, with CCM or COST, you know, kind of saying, oh, gee, we're going to appoint, this is going to be our, you know, designee this time versus next time or anyone else, is they happen to have an issue with this with bond commission with one of the state agencies, and they kept trying to send somebody else each time. And it's like, no, a letter's got to be on file with Secretary of State's office in order by statutes, right, everything else of who that designee is, whether it be the commissioner or their designee or who is designated for each of those positions. So it is a specific person, same as, you know, most other boards, commissions within the state do not have alternates. So obviously, if it's something that we want to look at, it's a legislative change that has to happen. And, you know, there may be some, you know, ways to, you know, look at that, whether or not we have just a group of people that are alternates, or it's alternates for certain positions that are labeled there. So there's a couple of things that can be looked at. Think of your zoning board of appeals, and then you might have a zoning board of appeals alternate. It's not an alternate for that position, but we have some alternate positions that would be able to fill in if we didn't have a quorum of the full members. There may be, you know, some creative ways to look at it in order to see. I mean, I think it's interesting also to note that, you know, at least voting wise, you know, Bruce had mentioned the last two meetings, you know, for voting, yet we've only, you know, with alternates, you know, we've been good. So we don't want to raise that issue either, you know, making sure that we voted on things that we don't have, you know, full membership at. So.
Okay.
But I would just add to what Martin just said, you know, in terms of our board, I don't know about John, but if you have alternates, there needs to be a letter on file from the governing body or, you know, deciding authority. So it's not just a split moment decision. You know, if you need to set aside a particular person, then you have that on file with potentially Bruce. So that, you know, if there's any challenges, you'd have it clear. But that's sort of the kind of content of a memo, you know, what it is and how you do it and all that stuff. My suggestion, whenever that's right, I'm not saying it's ready to do it now, but clear guidance on that would be very good. I think we have that in our actual bylaws, that there has to be a letter on file. We kind of allow emails. We've kind of taken that much liberty. So it doesn't have to be a piece of paper. But we don't want to get crosswise with this. If someone challenges one of our decisions and tries to unravel it, then that's, you know, it's the first thing. We don't want to find out that way.
Great. Ron?
Yeah, Brendan. Yeah. As to kind of piggyback on what Lyle was saying, but that's kind of what CCM has done. I'm the CCM representative, but when I've not been here, Brian has taken my place, and we submitted something to Bruce to that effect. So I'm not sure now. I'm not sure if that's appropriate or not, or whether it's even allowed. So it's something interesting to explore.
Well, yeah, haven't seen you for a while, Ron. So hi.
I used to have a beer.
Define interesting, but it's important that we get it straight.
Because otherwise, if it happens, if we have it through challenge in some kind of a messy situation, we don't want to wait for that. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Bruce, for being able to we'll endeavor to kind of put something in writing for all the members that will provide that type of guidance that Lyle is suggesting. That does make sense to me. Any other thoughts on that topic? Okay. So with that, let's move to item 3 on the agenda, which is just to approve the minutes for the September 10th meeting. We've had sort of a weird confluence of schedules for ACIR. Our September meeting was later in the month than normal. We have our subcommittee meeting on the same week as the full committee meeting, so we've had a lot of condensed discussions in the last 3 weeks. But can I just get a motion to approve the minutes from September?
I would move to approve the meeting minutes of September 10th.
Thank you, Bob. Valentine?
If I can interrupt, you're still one short of a quorum.
You've
had one more join, but you're still nice. Waiting for another.
All right. I tell you what, if it's okay, Bob,
we'll hold that.
We'll hold that vote.
I'll second it when we get a quorum. So.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to item 4. Thank you, Bruce. These are our regular report discussions regarding the session mandate report that's due in a very short 6 weeks from now, as well as the mandate compendium supplement and the ACIR annual report that's due in early next year. I know, Bruce, I continually defer to you every month for explanation or a guidance on what we need to do.
As before, these are just reminders, as much reminders to me as to you. And I think I can give you an update about the first of those because I'm nearing the end of the massive special session budget enabler. And I expect within about maybe 2 weeks, I can get a draft report out, maybe 3 weeks. And then you have, I think your November meeting is the 5th or 4th, and the due date is a week and a half after that. So I think there is plenty of time to work that out, and I will try to get it to you at least a week or two ahead of that meeting. The other two reports are, just to show that they're out there, I added the annual report to the list for this month, primarily because it includes a work plan and 2022 is approaching and, people should think or keep in the back of their mind what they would like the group to consider doing in the coming year. So that's all I have to say for that.
Okay. Great. Any questions on that? Thank you again, Bruce, for doing that. I know that is a arduous task. So thank you for staying on it and for wading through all of it. Are there any questions for Bruce about those reports? Just make sure next month we have a quorum so we can actually vote for it. Because what if we don't? Anyway, okay. So keep that in mind for next month. So we'll move on now to item 5, which is a study of the remote meeting access / voting that's required by the special session implementer that was adopted during the special session. I know this was reported at our last meeting, but just as a quick update, we did pull together an organizational meeting of that task force that was prescribed by the legislation regarding remote access to meetings. It was a good meeting. We had we had members of all of the groups that we need to consult with, specifically the Connecticut Association of Municipal Attorneys, or CAMA, the FOIC, and the Chief Information Officer. I think what was resolved as in that organizational meeting was that we needed to, I think, just clarify with the real folks in the room who were considering these issues and adopting these issues into legislation, to hear directly from them about what it is that they're looking for precisely from us. I think there are obvious ways to break down the subject matter into bite-sized pieces, but it may be a good idea to hear from the proverbial horse's mouths on what it exactly was that they were looking for. To that end, we were to reach out to the two chairs of Planning and Development Committee, also the GAE Committee, as well as the Governor's Office and OPM. So we've done that, but we have not organized that meeting. I think what we'll try to do the next week or so, I see that both the chairs of the P&D Committee have joined us, but what I think would make sense is if we could maybe have a conversation among those folks offline, and then invite those same folks to an open public meeting to kind of, again, share publicly what it is that they're looking for. But keeping in mind that the clock is ticking on this, and there is a lot of substance to this. I know I just received a call yesterday from a part-time city attorney, assistant city attorney in Greenwich, who's finding out about this and aware of this discussion. There's a lot of attention that is being drawn to this subject in Greenwich. Apparently they have a 400 plus member RTM, and one of their key questions is, how are you going to manage a virtual meeting with voting of a RTM of that size? Those are tough questions and thorny questions, and how to break this out and organize it is going to be critical. So I'm hoping sooner than later, before, perhaps in the next couple of weeks, we can get the chairs together and also schedule the time for the next meeting of that task force to proceed. So I don't know if there's anyone else from ACIR or who's listening who might have some other comment on that. Floor is open if you are, but keep in mind that we do have to, we're going to have to work pretty hard. Chairman McCarthy Leahy is raised your hand. Kristen? You're on mute, so there you go.
Thank you very much, Speaker Sharkey, and hello to all the members of the ACIR, and thank you for whether willingly or unwillingly taking on this task. I am very happy to work with Senator Cassano to pretty quickly get that first conversation going so that we can meet publicly and talk about this, but certainly as one of the folks who was part of that legislation, the hope would be that this group, which is hearing from bodies all over the state, would be able to help us as we figure out how to transition. I know a lot of communities are doing this already, but we've been doing it somewhat in, I guess, response to crisis basis. And how do we, now that the Pandora's box has been opened and this access has been provided, how do we do that in a way that is feasible for not just our full-time bodies, our executive branches, our boards of ed, et cetera, but all those other small boards and commissions that are largely made up of volunteers. So it seemed that it would be a good opportunity for this group to help us identify some of the challenges, not to come up with all of the solutions, but at least to help identify that. So I'm happy to work alongside you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker, and to get those conversations going.
Great. Thank you for that help. I think we want to make sure that we're doing something that's functionally valuable for the legislature going forward as this requirement goes into effect next year. So thank you for that, Madam Chair. Any other comments on this? We've got a lot of work to do, and I'm thinking October is going to be the month to get all that done. So strap in on that. I think we're going to need to, we're going to be going to take it for a ride later this month. All right. So with that, we'll move to item 6 on our agenda, which is the Local Government of the Future Initiative. As many of you know, LGF has taken on the question of how to define home rule, and to define it and clarify it so that it does not get misused or misappropriated in certain circumstances at the local level, depending upon the subject. We did have our subcommittee meeting it was Tuesday of this week, and thanks to Lon Seidman, who provided us some guidance on the impacts of this question on local boards of education and helping us to define what items are, with regard to home rule, affect boards of ed and what do not, and how our state statute works into this. So that was helpful, and I think we got a lot of guidance on that. What I also think we resolved at the, and this is for the group, the whole group's consideration, we did resolve, I think, at the end of that subcommittee meeting that perhaps, and it, this was a conversation that was spawned, I think, by Jim's offering last month, that the LGF committee maybe should be increasing its bandwidth a little bit or reserving its bandwidth to some of the other key issues that we, I think, as a group generally would want to talk about as far as the local government in the future. And at the end of the subcommittee meeting, I think there was a general agreement that perhaps we should not dedicate the subcommittee time from now through the end of the calendar year to continue this discussion and the application of the question, but instead dedicate it to other purposes. But I also think that there was also a consensus that we should do at least one more in October, which would be go right to the heart of what I think has spawned a lot of the concern for the misunderstanding or misappropriation of the term, to dive right into the question of local zoning, local land use authority, to ensure that we really do fully understand what we're talking about when we discuss a lot of these difficult issues that have been coming up over the course of the last year on zoning. So I think the will of the group was that we dedicate the October meeting to a discussion about zoning and land use and its application for and how home rule plays into that. But then beyond that, into November and December, move on. So that's more of a report than anything else. The other thing that came up at our full ACIR meeting earlier this month was offered from Senator DeSana, which was that perhaps rather than waiting until 2022 or the upcoming session next year, that we should move sooner than later to meet with the Planning Development Committee, in particular members, and then maybe an informational meeting with P&D members and other legislators to talk about what we're finding and clarify and offer these clarifications and discussion items sooner than later. I think there was general agreement from the group that we should proceed along those lines. So I know that the legislature has been busy this month as well with their special sessions, but we have not scheduled that yet, but I'm hoping that perhaps between Senator Pisano, who is with us, and Representative McCarthy Vahey, we can go ahead and schedule something. I would suggest that perhaps they can schedule it and just advise us as to what's the day that they might have in mind for that. Let us know and we'll be there. That might be the easier way rather than trying to coordinate everyone's calendars. So I don't know if anybody, if either the two chairs of P&D have a comment on that, or if there are any of the other more members have a comment or question about that.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, Jim.
We've heard Steve's heard and also read Steve's description of home rule as he sees it from his perspective. Do we know, are there other perhaps prominent law firms in the state that or others who have a legal perspective that is different, that somehow, you know how these things go, you know, it's there's always the other side to the coin with these legal issues. I'm wondering if there is a known different legal point of view.
Well, I'll start off. I'll let when you're referring to Steve, you mean Attorney Steve Mednick, as opposed to the Senate co-chair Planning and Development Committee.
Yeah.
Let me just also say that there is no other authority than Steve Mednick, and I think Steve would agree with that, right, Steve?
my mother would agree with that. Exactly. The others who would disagree.
Exactly. Well, it's a good point. I don't know, Steve. What's your thought about that?
You know, I'd be happy. I know most of the lawyers who work in this area, and I know that at least a couple of them have been on this call, and I'd be happy to run my definition by them. For me, there's no pride in authorship. I take pride in the work I do, but this is not my work. Ultimately, it's going to be the work of the ACIR at some point. So I have no problem with your permission to run it by some of the folks that I know at some of the firms, if they're willing to take a look at it. What I will say, James, is that there may be, and this will be the interesting thing. This is the thing that came out of the conversation with Senator Cassano at the last meeting. I think that the differences of opinion on home rule may not be on what home rule is, but what people think it is. And I think that there will be general agreement that the law I have cited is the correct way to define home rule, how people refer to it. And that's why I think the meeting with the legislative players is really important. Is I think sometimes people confuse the concept of home rule with legislation that is directory, that is directive, and that when you direct a local government to do something under statute, people think, well, you're violating my sense of home rule. And that would be the case if local governments had some sovereignty and all of a sudden the government was coming in and imposing these values on them. But the reality is, all we have is what the government says we have. And that's what I'm hoping we'll get clarification on when we meet with the legislative folks so that we at least have a common terminology in terms of how we view the definition. But I'll be happy to run it by. I'll talk to the speaker and try to identify a couple of firms, and I'm sure I can get some of my colleagues to take a look at the definition.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I agree. I think it is important for us to have a baseline understanding of what the law is and what it isn't. So unanimity on that topic is, I think, the first step in all of it. That's a good point. If there's another perspective on what the baseline is, we should know. John, I know you had a question.
Yeah. Thank you. And I apologize for missing the meeting Tuesday and had a conflict, but I raised this issue initially, and I just restate, I think this is after the debate and last session, I think this is a critical project for us. And, and Steve's given us a great base to work off of. And those meetings, as he was just stating, I think with the various legislators that we've mentioned, is important. And to try to capture that, I realize we have limited time to spend on things, but I think if we can provide that baseline document in context prior to the start of the next session, it will be of value to those on, especially the Planning and Development Committee, where a lot of the debate on this, or the word home rule and local control, and the phrase home local control, were used sort of interchangeably and often incorrectly. We can serve a good purpose with this, so I think it's something we need to bring to some closure, at least at some level, and deliver to the leadership. I think this is an important project. I just wanted to restate, I think it's a very important project for ACIR. And those meetings with the legislators, hopefully we can take place in the next month or so.
Yeah. And John, I'm going to put you on the spot, because I think you also volunteered to help draft up a...
Yes, I did.
Look like that. So
I'm pleased to do that and work with Steve and try to put bookends to what he has created. And because, as I've said, that debate, especially on the desegregated CT stuff, from both sides of the argument, often was wrong. And this is not a question of the validity of people's positions, but at least if we can have the argument on a common set of facts instead of just sort of assumptions on what home rule is or local control, which again is not something we've really addressed in this yet, is they're sort of used interchangeably and they're related, but not necessarily the same.
Right. Yeah, no, thanks for that, John. And you were the original impetus for us looking into this. So I think that observation is appreciated, and I think you're exactly right. Any other thoughts on that or comment? Okay. Not seeing.
Speaker Sharkey, may I jump in?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
I just want you to know that I am literally typing an email right now to try and get something scheduled for us in concert with Senator Cassano. So
fabulous.
We're going to keep that moving.
That's great. Appreciate that. Thank you. All right. So with that, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman. So with that report, let's move on to item 7 on our agenda, which is other business. There's been a lot of discussion, I think positive discussion, that unfortunately I have not participated in regarding the potential of doing work with UConn, only because I've had scheduling conflicts. So I'll defer to our vice chair, Lyle, to give us an update on what's been happening with Professor Al-Qadri and a lot of that discussion. You're muted, Bob.
Of course, I'm sorry. You're still going to get that T-shirt that says you're on mute. We've had several conversations, and we're having another one this afternoon, actually, on this. What we're trying to do is parcel out the pieces of this, and John, also, please join in here. A couple of pieces. I mean, one, Senator Al-Qadri is very interested in a thing called a solutions lab, which you get a dozen people together on a topic and sort of work out an issue on local government or state government in a room. It was actually sort of similar to what was done by Tony Blair when he was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, but you can take a tough issue and then assemble evidence-based practice and pull people together in a room and actually work it through. And so that's one thing. The other part is the policy center concept, and some of you might have been involved, but the Hartford Foundation had a year and a half or 2 year meetings on this, and quite a number of states have this. So we're having a conversation on staging and phasing of this and potential funding. And I think we're coming along. John Elsesser and I met with Joe DeLong earlier this week, and Joe said that he's supportive, and obviously he would like to get his board supportive. Ron, just to let you know, Joe is not getting ahead of his board, which is a healthy thing. But he thought that, CCM would be likely to support a state and regional and local policy center that would do problem solving for those areas. And then we're also having a conversation on some potential funding ideas for this. So that's sort of where we are. John, did you want to add to the mix here? And I'll go on mute.
John, you're on mute.
I thought you had the other John. No, I think you summed it up well, Lyle. I think we have another meeting today as well, correct?
Yes, I believe at 1 o'clock today we're going to be talking with Mr. Al-Qadri.
If I could just add a piece to this, and it's become very clear, there's a number of different pieces on this, why it's so complex. For example, there's beefing up OPM's technical assistance capacity. And John has made us aware of what Massachusetts does in this front with a fairly large municipal service unit that helps on technical assistance for towns and cities on issues. So that's one strand. The solution lab is very interesting. I sat on one on the state of Florida automating their DMV. And what it is, you get content expert, local elected officials, and everybody in a room and come up with potential solutions. So that's a second strand. Third one is a traditional policy center. And the point about that is you don't necessarily need to hire a lot of new people. UConn could have some of these people, some of their faculty on contract. You can have other contracts. And the other piece, Mr. Chair, which I think I was going to forget, but I remembered now, is for us to have a, frankly, an affirmative letter from the ACIR and maybe from Senator Cassano and Representative Vahey as well, asking the New England Policy Center as part of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston to pursue topics of interest to us. We are a federal, we're in the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston area, but we only episodically get coverage in terms of policy work. We've had something on shared services. We've had some work done on property tax reform. But a lot of the issues, I think one of the additional voices would be to have the New England Policy Center at the Federal Reserve Bank weigh in on this. The only downside with them is it may be a long lead time. The other piece of this, I'm not sure if the senator knows this, but there are several members of from Connecticut on their advisory board that we could access. So I would add another strand to this for the ACIR to consider topics that the Federal Reserve Bank think tank might want to weigh in on. I'm not sure you want to get them into local control, but there are issues of that relate to the upcoming CCM report and other things that we could have them ask. But I think affirmatively writing them a letter from you or from the Planning and Development Committee or the governor's office saying, please consider these topics as you move forward on your agenda. But again, there's going to be a lead time, but at least, you're in the queue And to my knowledge, there's no charge. So I wanted to mention that too. So there's four different circuses here, four different rings to the circus. There's a lot of different elements to it. And we're still working with Professor Alcadredi, deal with the Institute for Municipal and Regional Policy at UConn, and how that's, I think this week is folding into public policy. I think it's this as of today. So there's a lot of different moving parts, but we want to sort of clarify some of that today at 1 o'clock.
And for the for the OPM component, what we were looking at there was, I think, and correct me, Lyle, if I'm wrong, but two policy positions and a admin backup for that. And we were looking at a list that Martin had provided us with of existing positions, so we don't try to create something new and unique for this. So if it's to go forward, it makes it simple as it can be, and try to get some budget numbers around that. And these would be folks similar in line with what we see in Massachusetts that can do almost direct technical assistance to municipalities, act as a resource for ACIR, kind of multitask folks for our work and for our communities.
So there's just
sorry. Now, I know at our last meeting, just a second, at our last meeting 3 weeks ago, we were emphasizing the fact that the budgeting for 2022 in mid-biennium budget adjustments, if we were to get something in, we really need to do it sooner than later. So with regard, particularly with regard to the OPM staffing issue, do we have some clarity as to what we would ask for? I know, John, you kind of laid it out there, but in terms of and Martin has told us in previous meetings what to look out for. You know, this money is not going to be available from, say, federal sources, because that is not going to fund permanent fees and so on. I think Martin's suggestion was perhaps starting out maybe with that kind of funding for contract type employees who could then roll into a more permanent OPM staff position or positions. What has been the thought of the discussion among you all about that aspect?
I think we're looking at, in round numbers, about $500,000.
And timing for the ask?
Like yesterday?
Right. So do we need ACIR's approval to offer that up? Are we in a position right now for our members to vote on a submission of that kind to the administration?
If I could just add to that, I think yes. And again, this goes back to a hoped-for conversation with you and the governor on this. This goes back to the governor's transition team, where this was in there. So that's important to note. So if you put in $500,000, I don't know if Martin's still here, but he suggested, and he sent in our link in one of our Zoom calls, actual job classifications in the state civil service that would be appropriate. So with the appropriate roll-up. But my suggestion would be to have a motion to request to whatever parties that are appropriate to have the chair make a request or inquiries with the administration on including, $500,000 for OPM technical assistance and support for the next budget cycle.
Okay. Bruce, do we have a quorum at this point?
You do not. You might have even lost the person from who was here earlier. So whatever you do, don't make a motion.
Okay.
Well, how about, given the time urgency of this, Mr. Chair, you may want to seek forgiveness rather than permission. Given that it's in the governor's transition team and this has come up before, I think it's important to have inquiries on this sooner rather than later. Take note of opposition here. If there's anybody opposed to doing that, it might be good to know, but I know we can't do an official resolution.
I can also say, ACIR did endorse with the plan that we put forward last February to the legislature of beefing up OPM in this regard. So I can make an argument that we have endorsed this approach previously.
If I'm not mistaken, too, I think at an earlier meeting of ACIR, we actually did do a vote just a few months ago, something to this effect. But yep. Let me get to Martin and then Senator Cassano and then Jim.
Sure, thank you. I just wanted to give a heads up that from the last meeting and discussions on this, the secretary is aware I gave her a heads up that of just kind of what ACR was looking at with the several, you know, different proposals and everything. So you are aware, and also just reiterated by providing her copies of the public act report that we had done that John just mentioned, as well as the other documents, just so and the transition team document, just as backup. So she does have at least awareness of it, that it's something that, you know, I told her would be coming in from ACIR at some point, just so you're aware of that. And I think conceptually, obviously, it's good to get out there. I think details can get fished out, if you will, over the next month. But obviously, to get a conceptual in, you know, with further details to follow, maybe the approach to take.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Senator?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I was voting on that first vote that you had. Unfortunately, I was screened out. I had an index card with a note on it, and it was right over the camera. So I have been here from the beginning, but you don't know that.
Well, it's great to have you here. you're muted yourself inadvertently, I think. Senator, I think you're muted again. Sorry. There you go.
There we go. My co-chair obviously has spoken twice on behalf of the committee, and she's always, as usual, right on core. The discussion on the governor, I've had conversations with the governor's staff as to the request we had from last time. Maybe we ought to just have the governor sit in or be in for a period of time on our next meeting. That might be actually more productive and effective. If you want to pursue that, I would try to pursue that, because I think he needs to be a partner in this, and he can't be a partner without knowing where we're coming from. So if it's the wish of the committee, I would pursue that and see what we can do.
On which topic, Senator, were you thinking of that?
I think we've got a few things. If you know, we're going to get him once, if we get him, and I would think that we would tell him we have. Let's identify two or three topics that we want to discuss and give him 15 minutes to be a part of this meeting, and it might have an impact for the next year on what we're doing.
Fair enough. Are you going to make that? Should you make that call, or should I?
Well, I suggested actually when I talked with the staff that they contact you, so that might be the opening. I would do that. You're the chair.
Okay, good. All right, I'll connect up with Jonathan Harris.
All right,
take it from there. Thank you. That's a good thought, Senator Kim.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My thought on this is it's really essential that we find a way to have the OPM staff support. It is the case, it's a fact, that 20 years ago we had a terrific OPM support. You know, my view would be that ACIR, you know, the chairperson, the members really didn't do a lot of the key work that went into all the great work that was being done many years ago. So I'm wondering, you know, it was OPM staff that did that, or folks at UConn, that sort of thing. I'm wondering if it would be useful for Bruce to dig back through the records and see the level of staffing that was available to ACIR, you know, back 20 years ago, and try to replicate that. I think that would be, you know, perhaps a wedge into explaining why it is that we really need this support in order to accomplish the work that's been laid out for us. The other thing is that I would just say that I would pursue all of these avenues, whether it's the Federal Reserve group or UConn, legislative review. I think it all should be pursued because there's enough work to spread around.
Yeah, just on a personal note, I've been, since I was appointed chair by the governor, I have really been anxious to take ACIR out for a ride, so to speak, metaphorically, by, diving into a number of different topics that I think are relevant today. And I think we've accomplished that part. But part of the problem is that we just don't have the bandwidth within our membership to dedicate the time that's necessary to actually, really pursue these items fully. And so we're therefore hamstrung in terms of our ability to have the kind of impact that I think we can and should have. So I agree with you, Jim, 100% on that. The only other thing I would add is just that none of these comments about additional staff is in any way a reflection on or a suggestion that the current staff that we do have is not doing an amazing job. And I'm speaking specifically to Bruce for the work that he accomplishes for all of us. So I don't think I needed to say that out loud, but I thought it was important to put that on the record, how much we're appreciating all the work that Bruce is doing for us.
Well, the best alternative would be for Bruce to become a full-time staff member for ACIR. I mean, that would be the, he has the background and the knowledge. So that would make sense. I guess that's maybe too reasonable, but.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Okay. So we have our marching orders. There's a few things going on. I think what Lyle's suggestion, we may not even need forgiveness if I were to put something together, given, I think, the past record. Maybe Bruce, you can help me with that, too, if we can find the other. I think in previous meetings, we've at least impliedly authorized that type of communication to come from my from me, so to the governor. So I think we'll, even though we're without a quorum at this point, I think we can go ahead along those lines. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Cusano's hand is up. I don't know if he wants to speak again or he's.
Senator, I don't know if you. Yeah, do you have another comment to make? Your hand is still up.
Yes. I didn't put my hand down, but I don't know if we have a quorum now. I was voting yes in the last vote, but you couldn't hear me.
Yeah.
Technically, we had a quorum. Just couldn't see me.
Okay. Fair enough. I think the problem that Bruce pointed out was just that the actual membership on the screen, even with you, we could see that you were on screen, but right. Even with you present, it still was not, the number was still not there. So anyway, for what that's worth. Continuing on in item 7 of the agenda, we've covered a little bit of this, but the federal infrastructure funding and the governor's recommendation regarding ARPA. Was there anything further we needed to discuss about that in particular that anyone had in mind for that? And also for the plans for the 2022 legislative session. I think that is a separate item, not only because I think we're going to be pursuing it for 2022 the additional staffing, that is a legislative initiative that we're pursuing. But in addition, I think we had spoken at the last meeting about whether there were other legislative items that we had in mind for specific legislative action in 2022. And I'm not sure that has emerged as a particular ask, other than the budget ask. If there were any other legislative initiatives that we had identified. Is that a fair statement for anybody? Okay, I think so too. I know from a budget standpoint, we're running out of time, but we do have, if in the course of our home rule discussion, in the course of our study of remote meetings and virtual meetings, we may have some legislative recommendations that will come from that. And that may be our, another 2022 ask that we may be offering. So it's not that we won't have anything for sure. John?
I think, I guess it straddles into both the COVID response and that pending legislation that's going to be addressed shortly. And the next session is, and also in after looking at that, the report on the impact of the potential impact of state employee retirements coming up. Some exploration of which is not in that report specifically and only slightly mentioned in the governor's plan is the use of regionalism and cooperative approaches for the delivery of services, specifically through the COGS and the RESCs. I know that's a wide net, but it's an area that I think has, I'm speaking a bit selfishly, but I think it's an area that can realize some positive benefits to the state, and it's not really being explored as a serious option. And I think that's somewhere that we can have maybe some assist in steering policy.
Sure. Well, of course, we laid the foundation for that by rededicating the ARPA grant to just that purpose. So it's not just aspirational. We actually have the ability to fund it if the COGS and RESCs were able to take on more in-house.
When you look at what some of these agencies, if the potential is realized in that report, clearly alternatives, whether the application of technology, which certainly the state is aggressively pursuing, but you've seen that slideshow I did of with all the different maps. I mean, clearly we have a fragmented service delivery approach, and this is an opportunity maybe to get ourselves organized and more efficient. So I think we have a real opportunity here to build off of what we did last session with the local government of the future and some of the funding coming in through the American Rescue Plan and these pending retirements and reductions within the agencies.
Yeah, I agree. I know. I also. I guess I also just received a text from one of our members about facilitating a similar kind of discussion that others have been recommending. So I think there's an opportunity there. But I think your point's a good one, and maybe that should be the focus of an LGF initiative at the subcommittee level in terms of expanding on what we did with the ARPA 2.0 and really, put some flesh on that. In terms of advocacy and perhaps legislation. So, I think that's a good thought. Maybe that's a topic for next meeting. As far as giving, once we get through the LGF discussion about home rule, maybe we can move on and see if that makes sense for the subcommittee to take that on as a new topic. Any other thoughts on that? Okay. Great. Okay. So I'll move on to item 8, which is new business. I just was referencing that one of our members, apparently there's some new legislation that was adopted in the 2021 session about potential for fire department merger and consolidation. Apparently there's a task force that's been created to look into that. And our ACIR member, Rick Hart, who had to leave because of conflict, had texted me some of this information. Maybe we can reserve some time at our next meeting to discuss that as under a new business item. I don't know if anybody else had any insight as to that, on that as to, Martin.
Yeah, I can provide you insight since it falls under my purview.
Fair enough.
And for that, so, and I have this huge notebook here on this. So, the Special Act 21-12 requires a study conducted by OPM on the obstacles for merging or consolidating fire districts or fire departments. We have partnered with Connecticut Fire Service, who are putting on a fire summit 2025. It was supposed to happen a year ago, May. It will actually be happening in December. They've actually held stakeholder meetings throughout the state, gathering information. We're working on final agenda now. We do have a study committee appointed with members, municipal leaders that were recommended by CCM and COST. The secretary did approve those, as well as through the United Professional Firefighters Association in conjunction, all work together. So we've kind of combined the two groups, if you will, although we do have a separate, study group. It's a lot of the same people on both. We're in the process right now. By Monday, I'll know we're set up four work groups on four different areas that we're going to be working on for the study. For those members, and they're also going to be reaching out to different stakeholders. For those, we have to have the study done by, into the legislature by January 1st. Thing to remember is that this is not a mandated type thing where mandating people consolidate, but it's, to present what the obstacles are. Secretary's also asked us to look into state statutes, regulations, policies, of any issues there. We can use, if you remember, the public health district consolidation, using that as kind of a model for that, looking at some things for best practices for helping fire departments move forward. So we're expanding, the scope slightly on that, and obviously bringing in, municipalities and hearing some of success stories, as well as listening to, we have Pennsylvania coming in talking about their big, huge consolidation. We have New York's report, as well as a number of municipalities in Connecticut that have either successfully consolidated or merged, or ones that have considered and did not. So we're going to be hearing from all of them and kind of putting that all together. So that's kind of, a whole thing in a nutshell. But if anyone has particular, questions and anything else, feel free to reach out to me because I'm kind of spearheading it on the OPM side.
Great. When Jim has spoken in the past about the importance of ACIR to really address some of the big issues that face local state relations, but that's right in the heart of the kind of thing that we care about, I think, as an organization.
I did recommend when the bill was going through public hearing, everything else, that ACIR do this task, but obviously it didn't fall there.
Well, in some ways, I'm thankful, but on the other hand, I think
they gave you other ones to do. So,
right. I think maybe this is maybe a note for Bruce to kind of if we can get updates on our monthly meetings on what's happening with that. I think it would be really helpful for us to know that it is going on and how it's progressing. So, if we could just make a note of that for our next agenda. Thank you, Martin. That's helpful. I wasn't even aware that had happened. So, great. Is there any other new business that the group may be thinking about or under consideration?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I just wanted to make sure folks were aware that DEEP has started a new intergovernmental initiative in the form of a DEEP Municipal Connection newsletter that we intend to send out on a quarterly basis, more or less. We sent out the first one last week. The newsletters will have a theme. The last week's was waste issues, which have been, you know, at the front of mind for a lot of municipal leaders as of late. And I apologize for my son in advance if he starts screaming. But I wanted to make sure that folks on the ACIR were aware of this effort. I'm going to post a link to the newsletter in the chat. Within that link, you can read the newsletter, but there's also another link to sign up. We populated the list with all of the municipal CEOs' email addresses. I did not get all the COG directors in time in there. We have to work with a third party to get new email addresses in, but you will be included in the next one. But you could also have members of your staff or others sign up at the link below. So take a look at that. It would also be great to hear from members of ACIR what some future topics that would be helpful would be. You know, I think from our perspective, our agency does a lot of things from waste management to air quality to remediation to natural resources planning. There's a lot we do, and we can't be successful in our mission without the help of our municipal partners. So want to make sure that we are fostering good lines of communication, good relationships, and that's part of the purpose of this newsletter. So happy to take some suggestions. You know, feel free to send me an email directly. Be great to kind of have you bounce some ideas off of me to include in future newsletters.
Terrific. That's great.
Congratulations, James, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Got a good grip on it.
thanks, James. That's very helpful. I know in my role as a municipal attorney, still with the town of Hamden, you know, waste issues are critical. I mean, deep is at the center of so many the kind of worrisome issues that we're facing, you know. So that first newsletter was helpful, but there's other things going on as well. So thank you for doing that, and let's continue to, you know, cross pollinate within ACIR to make sure that we're getting information out. Any other new business from folks? Okay. Or any other matters for ACIR consideration? Bob.
I believe this is my last regular meeting of ACIR, as I will be retiring from town office after the November election. So I just wanted to say I've enjoyed working with all of you. It's been a pleasure to see all of the very detailed and comprehensive work that ACIR has been working on more recently. And I would say that if for some reason you have need for someone who's not an elected official to be on a committee or something, I'd be happy to serve if you have need. But thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for all of what you've contributed. I'm sorry that I wasn't focused on your impending retirement. And congratulations on being able to kind of move out of town hall and into a whole new world. But thank you for all your contributions that you've given to this group. You've been an invaluable member.
You're welcome.
Yep, very much so. Mr. Chair, I mean, November becomes less important when you're not an elected official, so you don't necessarily follow those things quite as closely as you might have in a previous life.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Although in the town that I work for, in terms of Hamden, there will be a change, apparently, come November. So, and then also in my hometown in Guilford, there will be some changes as well. So, yeah, at least on the board that side. But thank you, Bob. Thanks for participating and being such a valuable member to the group. But we'll see you next month, right? We'll be around for the October meeting, right?
Actually, I think my appointment is up on the 3rd of November.
Okay.
So it'll be the 5th.
You can make the October meeting. Right? Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is the October meeting. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's figure out a way to keep you on through perhaps an appointment from one of the leaders, you know, that is available on the staff. That's another. At the very beginning of our agenda, we talked about putting together a memo regarding alternates and appointments. That will be part of that assignment as well, to see how we can get you back on through another means. So,
great. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Are there any comments from the public who are not members of ACIR? Anyone who might want to offer anything to the group? This would be the time. Not seeing none. Just as a notice, our upcoming meetings, we're still on a TBA on the different study groups on municipal meeting formats. We'll be relying on Senator, on the co-chairs of P&D to help us with that. Our next LGF subcommittee meeting will be Tuesday, October 26th. 18:30, and then our next full meeting will be Friday, November 5th. So with that, I know we had to leave the vote on the minutes of the last meeting in abeyance. We'll do it next, with a quorum next month. Hopefully we'll take that up at that point. But in the meantime, with our lack of quorum, can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And second from Bob. All those in favor?
Aye. You don't have a meeting, so there's no motion. Sorry.
I was sort of tongue-in-cheek there. Yeah.
Yep.
But, okay, good. So in the meantime, we've got a lot of work coming up this month. So stay tuned and strap in and be it. And thanks, everyone, for helping out with that as we go forward. And in the meantime, have a great weekend.
Thanks,
everybody.
Okay, thank you all.
Take care. John. Hey, John.